The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Emerging from the depths of Green Lake, the hairiest man in Seattle radio, Mike Sock! Checking in from Rock Ewer, the pride of Simsbury, Connecticut, Tom Wussel! Streaming live from the Alaska Airlines Studio,
Neil, you'll be hearing the horn tonight, letting everybody know basketball be a key arena. It's Brock and Salk, as you can tell, with Tom Wassel in for Brock today. And this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness, NBA preseason action at Key Arena tonight.
Can I tell you something? I don't think I've ever once in my life had my name yelled over a PA system before.
Never?
I don't think so. I mean, I played in front of crowds, but you don't introduce band members like...
Maybe you should never. I mean, Huey Lewis would at the end of a concert. That's Mario Cipollone on the bass, Johnny Cola on the sax. My name's Huey Lewis, and you've just heard the news. Like, no one's ever done that for you in Afronesis.
Sophomore guard at 6'2, number 23.
I was in high school last year, right? That's so funny.
High school with like eight people in the stands.
Like a couple of old grandmas watching the game.
Yeah, like, what?
Screaming. So in celebration of this NBA exhibition game, all day long, we have the Seattle Storm PA announcer working in our building.
Oh.
And we are going to play a bunch of different NBA kind of drops and sound as if the show was an NBA exhibition game. So it's going to be loud.
Oh, no.
We're going to be asking for audience participation.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be exciting.
This sounds...
Wait, you say all day long?
Well, at least for the next 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
For this show.
At least, okay, I don't know about all day long or maybe even the rest of the show, but at least...
Obvious, our days are over at 10. So
that's right. When we say all day long, Tom, I mean, you know, we just mean for the next little while.
I know how it works.
All right, so this is going to be just like an NBA game here for a little while. The get-in price for tonight's game, Tom, is roughly $160 in the upper bowl and more than $200 just to get a ticket tonight in the lower bowl. That is a lot. People are, I mean, you may have some people out there who are bitter and angry and this, that, and the other, but there's obviously a lot of demand to go to this game tonight.
Yeah, 160. Now, how many does it seat for basketball? Is it 14,000 roughly? It's not like 8 or 9, right?
No, it's like 14, 15.
Okay, because I think it's only like 10 for concerts because you block out half the building.
Right.
Look, if you're an NBA fan and it's just a one-time, one-off thing, I can understand paying that much. I would pay that much to go see a concert if I really wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I knew that they were only coming to my area of the country once in a while, once every couple of years, if that. So it's pricey, but you know what? If I'm only taking care of myself, that's one thing. If I'm bringing a family, different story.
Yeah, all of a sudden you got, you know, that times four.
It's like $500, $600.
Or maybe even more. I mean, maybe if you want to sit downstairs, $800 all of a sudden to bring your family. And yeah, now you're hoping that work is paying for you or something like that.
Right.
I just think it's interesting. You know, we have all these conversations about some of the level of bitterness and the anger. And I hate Key Arena and I'm never going to do anything there. And it's the worst arena and I won't sit in traffic and the parking is awful and this, that, and the other. And then they start taking bids on season tickets for hockey, and they get 35,000 people. And then they decide to play an NBA preseason game, and I can read you through the text messages we have. This is ridiculous. The NBA is the worst. I can't believe it. Nobody should go. Nobody's going to go. And the get-in price is $200 just to go to the game tonight, and that just means the level of demand is that high. I think we have a major problem in our city or maybe even in our sports culture with the difference between the loud minority and the actual majority.
I think we have a problem with that in general.
That may be true. But that silent majority is huge when it comes to certainly a love of basketball or hockey or just a desire to not worry about all the things that that certain group of people is out there spewing anger at.
I think the type of person that listens to this show or any of the shows that we have, though, is a type that was dialed in enough at the time where when they lost the team, they became embittered. For the people that sort of just forgot about it or don't listen to us, that aren't dialed into every single thing that goes on in sports, I can see being in their position and saying, hey, you know what? The NBA's coming up here. The Warriors are coming up here, right? Durant's going to be here. Let's spend a couple bucks. Let's do that for a night. Maybe they're not the same people who are going to go out and spend money on season tickets on hockey or basketball should it return.
Great point! Let's make some noise!
You've made a great point, Tom, and you've been rewarded.
Howdy's in charge of judging what's a good point and what's not.
My real question is, how many times do you think you will be asked to make noise tonight? What's the over-under on number of times you will be asked to
Because this
game?
Drives Salk nuts.
What is the over-under on amount of times you'll be asked to make some noise? And with somebody who's
Wait,
there
Wait, this
count-
drives a contrarian nuts? Like, oh, someone's asking me to do something.
I want to know what the over-under is on number of times you'll be asked to make noise at the game tonight.
Wait a minute. Well, forget about the number for 1 second. You get that at any sporting event. This isn't
Mike
like an anti-NBA.
Like
this isn't an anti-NBA stance. Right?
Well, it's significantly worse in the NBA.
Because you get that at Safeco
and it's annoying.
Every inning.
It's annoying.
Okay.
It's annoying everywhere. I do not want ever for the people in charge to tell me when to make noise.
Your attention, please. A flagrant foul called on Mike Salk.
What? Why do I get a flagrant foul? For what?
I was flagrant.
For what?
Flagrantly being against somebody else. It's very negative.
So what?
Do you guys like being told to make noise back there?
I don't mind the call to action. You got to implore the fans. I was in for Ram Rules, and I'm in for this as well.
You weren't in for Ram Rules. Come on.
You were not in for Ram Rules. That's a lie.
I would love, for the sake of debate, to take a position against Salk here, but I'm right with him. I think it's dumb.
You can always choose not to do it.
It's not,
but it's still happening around you.
Deal with the adversity that
you want spontaneous
you
collectivism?
To.
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
It does if you just shut
no,
up.
No, it won't.
Yes, it does.
People are going to start changing out charge.
Howdy, you're
people
so
are all
wrong.
Of a sudden going to do that.
So, Howdy, you're so wrong about this. And as an example, I will go back no more than a couple of weeks. I went to the game one of the Storm finals game with my family. It was awesome. We had a great time, and thank you to Pittman for hooking us up. And he does. That's the voice you're hearing. Matt Pittman. Play me a little more, Matt Pittman. But you're just talking. Now you're just playing this over me?
I mean, look, this is what we have to do in games. How is everyone going to say charge? We don't play the music.
All right. So I'm there at the game, and at every available second, Pittman is screaming at everybody to make noise. Are you ready to make some noise, Storm fan? Are you ready to make some noise? Storm fans, it's time to make some noise!
It's time for noise!
It's time for noise! 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 And, you know, there's noise. And then near the end of the game, for whatever reason, he laid out. They didn't say anything. There was a timeout. They played a little bit of music. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say anything. He didn't ask for noise. He didn't demand anything of the crowd. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the entire crowd started chanting, "It's all over." It was awesome. Nobody had to tell them what to do. Nobody screamed at them. Nobody berated them for not being loud enough. Nobody put up a noise meter. Nobody did anything. They were just quiet. And guess what the crowd did? They responded by being invested in the game, taunting the other team, and screaming collectively as one unit, "It's all over." And it was the best part of the entire game.
That's spontaneous collectivism, Mike.
You hear that all the time. Just watching the game the other night with, I think it was the Yankees and the A's, and all of a sudden you just heard, "We want Boston" chants in the middle of the game. That's not because there was a big thing up on the scoreboard that said, "Hey, we want," but it just happens. That's what happens when you have a crowd that's somewhat intelligent and informed.
Are you saying the Yankees did something great that you really like?
There's nothing quite like the way the Yankee Stadium crowd is in at the ends of games. Tom and I were talking about it just earlier, like especially in the old building. It's not quite the same in the new Yankee Stadium. But in the old building and the ghosts that were there and everything, like at the end of the game when they would start just ramping that thing up and you get some poor sap like Young Kim out there for Arizona with deer in the headlights look. that game would speed up on him so fast. And the Yankee Stadium didn't need to tell everybody to get loud in that moment.
I'll give you a good example.
They just knew that they were rocking that pitcher.
You also can't compare like New York to the personality of Seattle.
Every moment about how the Sonics fan is the greatest of all time, and they knew what to do in the Sonic. Of course, I can. We're not. It's especially in basketball. Why not?
Do you think
there's a great proud tradition
fans?
of basketball here?
Do you guys think
I'm not
Seahawks
saying
fans
it's
need
not
to be
proud.
Prompted?
I'm just saying personality types. East Coast is different than West Coast.
Well, then why were the Storm fans able to figure that out at the end of their games? Pittman, that's enough. Enough out of you. Enough out of you. Anyway, I think they are capable. I think that we sell them short when we think that they're not. I think that fans here in Seattle are perfectly capable of knowing when to get loud, when to chant at the opponent. And CenturyLink
is... Safeco Field's a madhouse.
CenturyLink has been a great example. Yeah, sometimes now you have to sort of tell them, but for years it's the loudest stadium because people know when to do it.
It's kind of a moot point, though, because they're going to do it no matter where you are now, right? In an NBA game especially. It's one thing at Yankee Stadium. It's every NBA arena in the league. Just turn the game on for 5 minutes. You're going to hear basically the same thing. It's homogenized. It doesn't matter what city it is. So there's nothing you can really do, I don't think.
No, I'm fighting. We're just yelling at clouds. We're just old men yelling
you
at clouds.
You are very, very old, and you are definitely yelling at clouds.
I know I am. That's fine. I don't mind. I don't mind yelling
you
at
clouds. You know, you guys are going to get old someday, too. No. I just want you to know that. It's going to happen, and you're going to question things. You're going to die someday like everybody else.
We're going to become Earth is flat people like yourself.
What does that have to do with anything?
I don't think it does. Tom, don't you have to hear that from them.
Tom, you just become more susceptible to these flimsy opinions.
I've seen the edge of the Earth, okay? I've been there.
Where is it?
Antarctica.
Antarctica.
You want to know, Mike.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
You got to be careful because it's icy. You fall right off.
You've been to Antarctica?
Yeah, once or twice. I have penguins down there.
Yeah, me and the penguins are just hanging out.
Running around.
All right. Well, the game is going to be fun tonight regardless. Looking forward to the fact that all you out there who are desperate for the return of the NBA will get a chance to see it. You will be hearing things
like that. Wait a minute.
Like
no cheering?
Huh?
No cheering under
I guess
that?
Not. There's no... We don't have any. There must not have been any cheering behind.
There was no command in that, so nobody cheered.
Right. All they did is say a name.
They said a name. There's no reason to cheer. They didn't say to do it.
Right. You just sit there. And
oh, I see.
You put your hands.
I'm supposed to clap for Lydia.
Under your legs until you're told to make noise. That's the way you're supposed to watch a game.
I actually asked for people to be silent when my name was announced so that it would be a better viewing experience for you, Tom.
Lydia didn't want to get embarrassed by the entire crowd cheering for her.
I appreciate
and
that.
And so, you know, she just asked for a little quiet while her name was out there.
Cheer loudly.
Hey, let's move on. That's some fun for tonight. In the meantime, we both found ourselves talking about these running backs. Kyle was writing about this yesterday. There have been a lot of good rookie running backs over the last couple of weeks. You start in the first week of the season, we saw Royce Freeman look pretty good. We saw Philip Lindsay from Colorado, who's now with Denver, look great and basically tear apart the Seahawks in the first week of the season. If you've watched, Kerryon Johnson's looked very good. What in Detroit? We've seen Nick Chubb, who had a couple of big touchdowns for Cleveland the other day. If you've been watching the last 2 weeks, and certainly last night, Sony Michel's been very good all of a sudden for the Patriots after a slow start. He has run for over 200 yards combined in the last 2 weeks. It was over 100 once and had like 98 last night.
Barkley
couple of touchdowns.
Barkley looks good, but not great.
All right, but there's running backs out there who are really making a difference as rookies 4 games into their career. And Rashad Penny was the second running back taken after Saquon Barkley. A first-round pick for the Seahawks, a team that generally doesn't even like to make a first-rounder. They decided they wanted to pick Rashad Penny. And by the way, at the time, I loved it, jumping up and down, really excited. I liked what he was in college. Felt like his game would really translate to the NFL. Through 4 games, it's not. Through 4 games, we saw him called heavy by Pete Carroll after week 1. And then last week, essentially without Chris Carson in there, get passed up for Mike Davis, who had 100 yards.
What are you driving at?
I don't know. What the heck's going on? No, I am not willing to say that after 4 games. Of course not. Not with a rookie, because I think NFL players take different times to kind of get themselves acclimated to the game.
They do, but here's the thing about
that. That position shouldn't take as long.
I agree. Last year, though, they went with Chris Carson fairly early, who was a rookie. and now who was a seventh rounder, by the way, and now they have their first rounder sitting behind, not sitting, he's playing a little bit, but he's essentially behind a seventh rounder. It's not like Chris Carson has years and years of experience where you want him to sit there and learn. He's only got, what, four more games worth of professional experience, essentially? I agree with you, it's perplexing. I'm a little encouraged by the fact that when Penny's been out there, maybe it's just in the last game, he actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, about seven rushes for 49 yards last week. He's
right.
Pretty good.
And in a couple of key spots there. But if you're asking me, is he going to translate to what a first-round talent should be, being a focal point of an offense that really wants to run the ball? I don't think it's going to happen this year.
It might not.
I'm still unsure if it's ever going to happen.
It doesn't necessarily have to happen this year either. Mm-hmm. And I know this can take time. And we saw Alex Collins as the best example. And I know a lot of people are texting in because Alex Collins was here, did nothing for a couple of years, goes to Baltimore and becomes a 1,000-yard back last year. I get it. Some of it's the offensive line. Some of it's the system. Some of it is time that it takes these guys to figure it out. And they're all on different schedules. Just because Chris Carson came in ready to go from week one doesn't mean every running back needs to do that. And by the way, if he was a wide receiver, I'd be sitting here saying, look, it takes time. If there's one position that seems to take the most time to learn and figure out, it's other than quarterback, it's the wideout spot. It's just complicated and they get thinking and it takes a time for their natural ability to really let loose out on the field. I'm fine with that. And Golden Tate's one of the best examples. I mean, he was nothing for 2 years and then turned himself into a really, really, really good player. I'm not telling you Penny's a bust. Not close to that. I do think that you're right, that he not only has to be good, he really needs to be great in order to warrant being taken as a running back in the first round when all of those guys were available after him, including a few of them who were undrafted free agents or later round picks. And this team's got as many needs as it does, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
It's not only that maybe they could have gone with a different running back. A couple of years from now, we may just look back and say, well, it was a wasted first-round pick, even if he turns into a decent player. Mm. Because if you're drafting a running back in the first round, I think he has to be that centerpiece, right? I mean,
he's going to be great.
Even on a team where your focus isn't necessarily running the ball, I think he absolutely has to be great. It was a confusing pick then. I liked it because I thought that just his skill set, he could do a lot of different things. Hey, it's Pete Carroll's offense. He looks for that type of thing. Okay, I'm fine with that. I'm a little surprised that it's been slow to start here. But again, these things have a way of working out where the right guy, he's not gonna sit there with a ton of talent and Pete not know it.
No,
you know what I mean?
I think you're right about that. It's interesting to see some of the text messages here and about half of them on Penny size saying, hey, look, give him time. Takes a little while. And others saying, dude, he's a bust. Rashad Penny was a wasted draft pick. Why are you guys even wondering about this? And I'm definitely not there. But I do think there's some pressure on it. After a couple of years of nothing really in the first round, they made a decision to go with a guy who was not your obvious candidate to be the second running back off the board. That's okay. I don't mind that. But when you make those decisions, and certainly to pick a running back in that spot, you put a little extra spotlight on you. The old eye of Sauron that we've talked about on this show before turns its little beam right at you and says, wait, hold on a minute. This is out of the ordinary. You drafted Rashad Penny in this spot. That's abnormal. If it works out, you get all the credit in the world for it. If it doesn't, it's one of those things that people say, why didn't you just do the obvious thing? Why didn't you either A, take an offensive lineman or a defensive player in that spot, or B, take one of the running backs that everyone expected you to take, like Chubb or Michelle, who were both available and have been pretty darn effective so far this year.
Yeah, and now I'm watching Mike Davis do what he did. Now, granted, against the Arizona Cardinals, maybe a different story there, but if the offensive line is doing their job, it goes back to the old thing with Emmitt Smith. Could anybody have run through those holes?
Yes.
I mean,
honestly, there's no doubt in my mind. I have of all of the Hall of Famers in any sport, the one who I feel anyone could have done their job nearly as well as them is Emmitt Smith.
Now, he was a tough runner, though. He did it for a long time. He did it that one game with the shoulder, with the dislocation. I mean, he was a tough, tough guy. But we're talking about a guy who amassed all that yardage. And that line stayed together for a long time.
If any number of good running backs had that Dallas Cowboy offensive line and that offense, they would have easily put up the same number of yards. And that's not, like, I don't mean to take a shot at Emmitt Smith. He is a Hall of Famer, and he ran for them all, and he stayed healthy, and he did things that allowed
him. And he elevated in big spots.
Absolutely. There's a lot of great things about him. But that offensive line, I mean, I just remember watching those games on late Sunday afternoons, and they'd be playing against some lousy Cardinal team that was a joke, and he'd be running through, like, not holes, he'd be running through gulfs. It's like, oh, there's the Gulf of Mexico, and it looks like he's going right through. There he goes. I mean, just enormous, enormous holes for Emmitt Smith. So you're right. The offensive line plays such a huge role in how we judge these running backs.
Right. Now, if you have a substandard offensive line, you need a running back that can create himself. Marshawn Lynch, for example. Somebody like, by the way, when he was here, the offensive line was okay, right? It was at least adequate. I'm not even sure if Penny's that guy. Can he create on his own?
We haven't seen him do it really yet.
I'm not sure if Carson or Davis, well, I'm pretty sure Davis is not. Carson, I think, yards after contact. I think there's something there. But how much can he create? I don't know.
Do you want to see them run the ball a lot this weekend? I mean, this is like the big debate all of a sudden here in Seattle is how much to run the ball. And I'll put myself squarely in the camp of that's the way they've built the team. If you don't think that's the right way to build a team, I got your back. Like, it might not be the right way to build a team. And for all the never run people out there, throw, you guys might be right. That might be the best way to build a team. But it's not the way this team was built. This team wasn't built with great weaponry on the outside and an offensive line that's better at pass protection than running the ball. They were built to run. They drafted a running back in the first round. They've taken for the most part, offensive linemen that are better moving forward than moving backwards. The guys on the outside are not great. Brandon Marshall's 1,000 and keeps dropping balls. Tyler Lockett's a second or third wide receiver. And Doug Baldwin's like a short yardage, quick get off the line guy.
If you're within two scores.
What am I missing?
Well, if you're asking me if I want them to stick with the run, if they're within two scores.
Obviously, at the end of the game, you get down, you got to throw to get yourself back into it.
But I'm actually okay with them abandoning it in the third quarter if things are about to get out of hand. Just because it's this team. If it were Arizona, stick with it. By the way, if they're in the third quarter and they're within two scores, that probably means they're doing something right defensively or they're keeping the ball out of Goff's hands or whatever. So if it's that situation, then stick with it. But at some point, I want to see Russell make some plays. I don't want this run game to work so much that Russell just sits there and hands the ball off all the time.
I think that makes some perfect sense. It's interesting, you know, the whole idea of, I don't know, call it analytics, finding its way now into football over these last couple of years. And we heard it yesterday. We had Kevin Clark on from The Ringer, who was great, by the way, and made a pretty good point about, hey, some of the better teams right now are 80% traditional, 20% of the new stats. Great. And I know they're going to make NFL teams better. I do. When baseball teams, hockey teams, basketball teams start embracing the statistical revolution, they get better. You get better at winning. I really, really hope it doesn't become the prominent way of doing business in the NFL. Not because I don't want teams to be good at winning, but because it gets boring. If they all go to the same
formula,
every team in the NFL goes to the same style because it's statistically proven to work, that's not good for us, the viewer. I think one of the things I love, and I don't think I'm alone in this, I love that some NFL teams throw it a lot and some teams run it a lot. I love that some NFL teams prefer to play man and some prefer to play different types of zone. I love that some teams play a 4-3 and they're aggressive and trying to get through the hole, and the other teams are playing a 3-4 two-gap system with some big fellas up front of the nose tackle who are just trying to keep you from getting past them. I love that there's power running teams and zone read teams. I love all of those different varieties that make the NFL in every single week and every single game unique. And if everybody decides, nope, this is the best way to win, that's not good news for the NFL. It's not good news when every team is running the spread. It's not good news when every single week you're seeing the exact same type of game.
I think that's bad.
Do you think
that there's going to be a stat, though, or a series of stats that's going to lead people to believe that there's a best way to win?
I bet there will.
Football is a different type of game, though, than baseball. I can see how in baseball everybody wants to build their team the same way. And in an emergency, maybe you go to this bullpenning thing. In football, it's just different, man. Pete Carroll's gut, I know it's gotten us in trouble before, but that matters. That makes him different from every other coach. I mean, when you're making decisions on third and short, fourth and one, whatever it is, I think that the gut's always going to factor in.
Personal foul. That is number 6. Tom Wassel has been ejected from the show.
Oh, you've been disqualified, Tom.
Because what did I say?
That was too many personal fouls.
But what did I say?
Don't worry about it. It's just too many.
What did I do?
Fouled out?
Hey, now you're acting like an NBA player. What's going on around here?
What did I do?
What are you, Rasheed Wallace? You're going to get another technical around here. All right, coming up next, I got a question for all of you guys, including Tom, and then we'll do some open phone lines here at 9 o'clock with a lot going on. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, everybody.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Space Jam. Here's your chance, do your dance at the Space Jam. Alright.
Oh, we'll have some open phone lines for you guys coming up in a half hour at 9 o'clock. Man, there's been a lot going on this week, and between the NHL and the NBA tonight, and football and baseball, playoffs, everything else. Hope to hear some interesting and diverse calls coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, 206-421-3776. I saw a question this morning, Tom, that kind of got me thinking, and thinking about you, because usually you like questions like this. This is kind of the type of discussion I love having with you. And that's about rivalries. Anybody who's listened to this show for a while knows that one of my favorite things in the world is rivalry. There is nothing better than two teams that truly dislike each other, and the fan bases look forward to it. And as great as everything was when the Seahawks were going to back-to-back championships here in Seattle a few years ago, generally the best part of all of that were the games against the Niners and the hatred for that team and the hatred for Jim Harbaugh and their hatred for Richard Sherman and the Seahawks. When you take a 10 intensity, bring rivalry to it, and then it all of a sudden tunes up to 12, that's the best. And that to me is like at the essence of sports.
Yeah, it becomes your own Super Bowl.
And I saw a question this morning from Evan Cohen, who's a pretty good national host.
He's a terrific host.
I love Evan. He's one of my favorites. Great guys from Miami, or he hosts in Miami, and he also does some stuff nationally. And he was asking, what's the best rivalry right now? Because a lot of the big ones don't seem like they're as important or as passionate as they once did. And I think he was asking because obviously Red Sox-Yankees is about to start, one of the all-time great rivalries. But he threw out there like, look, that doesn't feel the same as it once did. In his view, Michigan-Ohio State didn't feel quite the same as it once did. UNC-Duke doesn't feel necessarily as great as it once did. And all probably for some different reasons. Are there truly great rivalries right now? What's the best one?
Boy, right now.
And you guys can jump in on this as well. 710-710, powered by Coors Light, or 206-421-3776.
You know what? I think the college rivalries will always seem big to the people involved. If you're a Red Sox fan or a Yankee fan and you've been around for a while and you lived through 2003 and 2004, whatever's going on right now just isn't going to top that. That was a two, arguably three-year war. Right, that just culminated with all these huge moments and personalities, et cetera, and it took over the sport. It really did. In college, you're going to get that, not every weekend, but at least a couple of times a year. Washington, Oregon, Washington State. No, whether the teams are good or not, that's always going to be there. But if we're just talking generally, what's the one that everybody has to watch? I don't think it's there. Do you?
It certainly isn't the way it once was. It's interesting. So many of these, you know, sort of naturally great rivalries have always had. I think there's two reasons why. One, none of them seem to have any real hatred right now. And you mentioned Red Sox, Yankees. It seems like all those guys on those teams are best friends. It doesn't feel, you know, when A-Rod and Curt Schilling and Trotnicks and those guys were fighting, or go back in the day with Thurman Munson and Carlton. I mean, like, those guys hated each other, and it made the fan bases hate each other. But it's more than just the fans of those teams. The rivalries truly become great when the rest of the country wants to see it.
Right.
Right? When you can't wait to see Michigan-Ohio State because you know what the intensity level is going to be.
Michigan-Notre Dame, I was there earlier this year. That felt pretty real.
I'm sure when you were there, and I'm sure amongst those fans it does. But from the outside perspective, is that something I feel like I need to watch? And here's the reason why I don't think we're there. One, we don't hear enough about the hate because everybody's been sort of homogenized. And B, I think they've been pushed down our throats for so long that they've disappointed too many times.
I think, yeah. Well, the Red Sox and Yankees in particular.
It became the only thing that Fox or ESPN would put on the national product. So at some point, you're like, dude, I don't want to see any more Red Sox-Yankees. The games take 4 hours. They don't mean any more to them than any other game. Stop showing me this. Like, it just doesn't have the same level of drama, and they're trying to fake it.
Well, is the problem us, though?
No, not necessarily.
It's not. Well, think about it. It's both. But once you've experience something, don't you just kind of get sick of it? You outgrow it. Personally, I mean, I outgrew my team. I outgrew that rivalry. I'm just sort of onto other things. The Seahawks and 49ers was cool because you had the Harbaugh-Carroll thing, but it was also new.
I think
both teams have been down, and all of a sudden they're the two best teams in the league.
They both have to be super elite. I think if you're outside that market, both have to continuously be elite, and that's just hard in any sport to maintain to maintain greatness.
But just being elite, I don't think is enough. I think there has to be that edge that makes that rivalry extra
special.
I'll
watch two great teams any day of the week.
But to truly become elite rivalries,
to be
in this conversation, almost all of the great ones have had a level of, whether it's violence or just anger or just something where it feels like at any moment the top might come off. Celtics-Lakers, at the peak of that rivalry, it felt like at any moment those two teams might start brawling out on the court because they were totally different. We saw it with Red Sox-Yankees. We've seen it with Michigan-Ohio State. We've seen it in
Toronto Maple Leafs-Montreal Canadiens is a really good one.
At any moment.
It was like class warfare. But English-speaking versus French-speaking. It was like working class versus,
And maybe one day the Leafs will like win a game or two in the playoffs and we'll actually be able to like see that rivalry get taken to an even greater height. That would be awesome. Most pathetic great franchise in all the sports, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
But like Alabama Auburn to me is the only one right now that has that feeling.
Does it have a national appeal though?
It does to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Alabama Auburn is the one great rivalry to me right now because Alabama's great every single year. Auburn's been at the very least good most years and great occasionally. And often even when they're only good, they'll find a way to give Alabama a good game and maybe beat them. Sure. And when you hear all of the sound from Feinstein's radio show with the crazy people down there and the poisoning of the trees, I know it was a decade ago, but it still feels like that one has that same level of the top could come off of it at any moment.
And it always will, again, like you said, locally, but that one to me feels the same way as Michigan Ohio State. I don't even know what the origins of that rivalry are.
Mm.
I've never quite understood that. I mean, Red Sox Yankees. You go back to the sale of Babe Ruth. Think about that. The fact that so many great players have passed between both teams. I think that helps. That's where the fans come in and they hate.
Well, so what is it going to be? I mean, I guess it leads you to what things are going to look like here in a few months when Richard Sherman shows back up here in Seattle. In a couple of weeks when you go to London and Marshawn Lynch is going to be. I mean, you're going to get a chance now all of a sudden to see some of these ex-Seahawks that have gone elsewhere and been chirping from the outside. Will that affect some of that level of, I mean, look, the problem is you're going to do that against San Francisco and they're going to be starting CJ Beathard.
Right.
Just like, okay.
Well, that goes back to Lydia's point, though, about both teams being elite.
Agreed.
Look, they had the two coaches who didn't like each other. They played a similar style. They were the two best teams in the NFC. Two exciting young quarterbacks with Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. The trash talk. I mean, there was at least five or six things going on there at once that made that work. That's just organic. I don't think you're asking me where is the next rivalry. You can't predict it, and I think that's part of the beauty of that. Because those two teams, I mean, the NFC West was brutal before, about 2011?
Yeah.
49ers got good. They already had some talent.
Seahawks won it at 7-9. I mean that's
right,
how bad
exactly.
That's how bad the division was. It was captured at just 7-9.
Right. Plus, I think there's a coast. I mean, I know it's still a couple hours flight away, but there's a coastal thing going on there. They're not right down the road, but
there's
they are
an element
isolated.
Of a lot of fans of the other team. And we've talked about this before on the show of like kind of, well, when does rivalry get great in Seattle? Why does it seem so different in the Northeast? Well, because everybody knows a bunch of people. Right. You walk into your office the day after a game, and there's a bunch of people there ready to talk smack to you because they went to the other school or like the other team, and you see that here. I mean, Washington-Oregon's going to be next week, and if Oregon beats Washington, I know Chris Sullivan's going to come storming in here wearing neon green from head to toe, and Brock and Danny and all the other big Husky fans around here, howdy, aren't going to want to look at him. And vice versa, if the Huskies end up beating Oregon, which they probably should do, I know that Danny's going to look like a big purple grape and probably go rub it right in Chris's face. And that's what makes you truly hate the other team, because somebody's making you feel bad about your loss.
If you think about it in that regard, if your team was going to go winless in a season except for one game, but you knew that one person, who is that one person that you would want to beat?
Yeah.
That's usually answers that question.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it.
But Washington, Oregon isn't going to do anything nationally.
No, not necessarily because they haven't both been elite and because
they're just too isolated.
The college football watching public doesn't even know that the Pac-12 exists, let alone that there might be some rivalry in it.
Even the Pac-12 would be maybe like USC Notre Dame, I guess. Like, I don't know. That's kind of an intense rivalry.
It is. And just the long-term nature of the whole thing. But that almost feels more storied than rivalry. Like, oh, it's the long history of Notre Dame. And all right, fine. But I don't know if there's that true hate there.
Well, even watching last night, Colts-Patriots, 10 years ago, that's probably the best rivalry in the sport. Why? Because you have the two best players, yeah, and their personalities couldn't be more opposite. You got the pretty boy with Tom Brady, and then the sort of droopy goober Peyton Manning, but they're both just unbelievable out-of-this-world players.
Now, I hope it continues, man. I hope we start to see some of these rivalries pick back up, because right now it does feel like there aren't a ton of them that are truly mattering the way they're supposed to. That means there's just a good opportunity for that next one to develop. All right, we'll get the open phone lines coming up in 15 minutes. Good news, bad news, no news, and a practice facility going into Tom's backyard next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You know what time it is. Good news, bad news, no news.
We are... Kyle Brown. It's your own intro.
The new NHL practice facility will be located at Northgate.
That didn't have the same ring to it. Why didn't you do it in Pittman's voice?
The new NHL practice facility will be at Northgate.
Do I stand up and cheer now?
You're not told to. Only when you're told, Tom.
I'm going to say this is good news because it means something cool is happening nearby where I live.
What about for the people of Seattle in general?
You know what? I got to say, though, there's a ton of construction already going on over there with whatever off-ramp they're building.
They're building the new
monorail thing.
Yeah.
Which seems to, it doesn't really, there's like no progress day to day. So I guess we can build something else there. But, yeah, bring your kids.
Monorail.
All right, I'll say this is all great news. They are putting a giant light rail station there that'll go into the city. There's supposed to be 1,300 apartment units going in. And then in that whole area, they're now going to add a completely redone mall and this practice facility that will have three rinks in it, and I'm guessing some commerce as well. I think it's going to be a great idea. An area that right now has not a ton of personality to it, I would say, that Northgate area, and this will bring some of that. But more than anything, it's right near the city. It's an opportunity for this hockey group to go out and start promoting its product. You know, I'm going to guess that those rinks will be used in some community fashion in addition to using that area for the practice facilities. And it's great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Now entering the show, boy.
George Fant will play some tight end for the Seahawks on Sunday.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing old Georgie out on the field. He's one of my favorite guys on this team. He's always consistently one of the nicest guys to interview, rooted for him. It was a bummer when he went down with the injury last year, and I don't know whether he's going to ever truly make it as a starting tackle in this league. But he did come up playing some tight end, and if he's able to just use that big body to help set the edge a little bit and make a couple of blocks on key running plays, great. And then, yeah, I'll admit, anytime somebody who's not supposed to catch the ball catches the ball, it's super exciting, man. I love that in the NFL.
I'm still going to say bad news, though. The situation at tight end is not good. Ed Dixon should be here. He's not. Will Dissly was having a nice year, at least through 4 weeks, with him gone. I mean, Nick Vannett, you talk about guys making catches, man. I'm not sure if he can catch the ball.
He's the guy Brock probably routinely gets most mad about.
Yeah, I mean, when he does catch the ball, I'm shocked. I am. I really
wipe sweat from your brow.
I'm actually shocked when they target him, but sometimes I guess I just have to. But look, I'd be happy for anything good to happen to George Fant after what he's already gone through.
Don't you love when people who aren't supposed to be in a place do something on a football field?
What do you mean, though?
Punter kicks, kicker punts, somebody else has to come in and long snap. Lineman catches a ball. Defensive player plays offense. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
I like it in baseball, too. Oh, they got to bring in the emergency catcher? Oh, the first baseman's going out to the outfield? The catcher's going to go play first base?
But usually that means that you're already in a dire situation.
Yeah, but it's still kind of fun that it happens.
Just block.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Now we're in the show, Lydia.
Really gives me the R roll, which I really appreciate. Thank you, Pittman. Chris Peterson says tight end Hunter Bryant is, quote, on track to return in November.
In November? Like this November?
Like this November?
Like he's going to, isn't he on IR? Just kidding.
So with the new redshirt rule, he could theoretically come back, play four games and still redshirt.
That's pretty awesome. Look, Hunter Bryant is a beast. For those of you who aren't as familiar with him, I mean, he was an unbelievable high school player here, went to UW, and was going to be, in all likelihood, their one or their first or second best pass receiving option as a tight end this year until he blew out the knee. I thought he was done for the year. I didn't even know that this was a possibility. He could be back as soon as November. That would make them significantly better.
Yeah, good news, especially when the schedule gets a little bit more difficult down the road against teams like Stanford now, the Oregon game now, that's not, he wouldn't qualify for that one. But yeah, obviously getting a player back healthy like that, great news.
Do you think they can be a Final Four team again?
I said the other day, I think they can run the table. They've got some work ahead of them. When I say run the table, I don't mean, oh, they've got just an easy schedule, they're just going to kill everybody. There's some challenges in there, but are all those games winnable? Definitely.
Yeah, I think so, too. Definitely. I mean, they can definitely beat Oregon. They can beat Stanford. Now, they got some challenges with, like, these teams coming off byes while they have short week. Like, there's some challenges for them. Set two road games in a row and stuff. But if they do it, I think they're going to be right back in there in the Final Four.
I think they're good enough to do it. I think they have the talent. And if you look, the best-case scenario is that you lose to a team like Auburn week one and then win out. So, yeah, absolutely.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Colts owner Jim Irsay tricked out his suite so that he can enjoy it more.
The owner's box with the Indianapolis Colts has a special glassed-in case.
Because he's burning cigs,
so
bro.
He can smoke cigs in the stadium and watch the game.
And it's probably the only one.
I don't know how it's legal, but I guess when you own the team, you can do whatever you want.
So he just built a glass box to smoke cigarettes in?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And then he'll poke his head out every once in a while whenever there's a special guest. They'll give the wave to the Jumbotron. Place will go crazy. Back into the glass.
That's who? Pat McAfee, who used to play for the Colts, the talking about that. So what does he have? Like, it's like a... You think it's like a... What do they call those things? Those pneumatic tubes? Where he, like, goes into a little tube, smokes the cigs, and the air gets sucked up into the atmosphere and out of the stadium.
I was thinking of it like when you go into that case and the money flies around and you try to grab all the money.
That's what I was imagining.
That he's just sitting in there just burning heaters.
What do you think? You have to light it before you go in? Because, I mean, the wind tunnel thing would make it hard to light, or you need a really good Zippo.
Do you ever go to that room? By the way, bad news on this because you shouldn't smoke. You ever go to that room in the airport in, like, maybe the year 1999, 2000? But the room was about a quarter of the size of the room we were in.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, like, 10 people in there.
It was so disgusting.
It was the most disgusting room
when I was in college. I think I liked cigarettes more than anything in the entire world. And I remember going into that room in St. Louis at the St. Louis airport and being like, yeah, I can't do that.
Get out.
Even that's too much for me. That's a bridge too far.
It's embarrassing to even sit in there. It was awful.
It smelled like, instead of smelling like smoke, it smelled like the ashtray.
Yeah, and then when you walked out, you smelled like the ashtray.
It was really awful.
I used to smoke in my dorm room, though, did you?
So did I.
That was pretty great. But don't smoke.
Why is that on me?
Has been the show.
This is ridiculous. Ball don't lie.
Smoking cigs indoors in the St. Louis airport.
Yeah,
that's
that was
an
gross.
Ejection.
Yeah, it's true.
It was the
Midwest. You gotta go.
Not the worst thing that ever happened to me at that airport. All right, I gotta run. Let's do this. Huh. We need some. We need some calls. All right, full. Can we get the phone lines full?
Call.
They're open.
Please.
The phone lines are open. We do this on Fridays, 9 o'clock every single week, our little Friday open phone lines. What is on your mind? What is the point that you've been trying to make all week to your friends in your bar or your buddies or your poker friend, whatever it is?
The smoking room at the St. Louis airport.
If you've been in the smoking room at the St. Louis airport, what are you trying to tell that guy about sports? So everything's open to you. Seahawks and where they're at. Earl Thomas. The week started with Earl Thomas flipping off his team. It is now going to go on to the Rams and an interesting battle against a great team. You got the Huskies and where they're at, getting ready to go down to UCLA, where they somehow haven't won since 1995. The NHL team got announced or nearly made official this week, and now we got a practice facility.
The
NBA game is going to be tonight here in Seattle. How do you feel about it? So anything that's on your mind, you get to direct the show. 206-421-3776. We'll take your calls next on Brock and Salk.